It's perhaps difficult for us to really get a strong sense of how despised, how hated Zacchaeus would have been in that town. I mean, I imagine that the people of Jericho, imagining that of all of the fair citizens of that place, that we would remember Jericho by this horrible name, by the name of Zacchaeus. They would have just thought, we've got so many good citizens to remember us by. Why did you choose this dog of a man? Why did you choose this horrible individual? What has he got going against him? Well, apart from that he's short, and obviously it's only tall people who are the best ones in the world. But so he's wealthy, and he's not just a Telonus, he's not just a tax collector, but he's a archetelonus. He's a senior, a chief tax collector. So not only did he make money from the people, not only did he make money on the side, but every other one of the tax collectors in town, he would have been skimming profits off of them as well. So he was a collaborator in the oppression of the people by the Roman Empire. He was apparently a Jewish man, because at the end Jesus calls him a son of Abraham. So he's this Jewish man who has sold his soul in order to make money, in order not just to make a little bit of money either. We're told he was a wealthy man. So I imagine him dressed in all of the finery. He's standing there in the very best that money can provide. I imagine he's got a very nice house. Jericho was famous. It's called the City of Palms. It was a place where you would get the very best of produce. It was a place where the climate was much more mild than up in Jerusalem, and so many people would go down to Jericho for a holiday, and they'd have perhaps a holiday house. Well, certainly the richest people would. But Jericho also stood for everything that was opposed to the kingdom of God. It was Jericho that stood there when the people had finally left after 40 years there in the wilderness, and they made their way across the Jordan River, and they were to take ownership and claim the promised land. But it was the city of Jericho that stood there opposed to the will of God. And so Jericho has always been that symbol of sinfulness, that symbol of the things that opposed the will of God. And in the midst of this lived this most heinous of characters, this collaborator with evil itself, this man Zacchaeus. But the first thing we hear is that Jesus walked through the midst of the town. And Jesus is not afraid of sin. Jesus is not afraid of sinners. He walks in the very midst of people who have grown cold to the will of God, who forget the power of God to work in their lives. But Jesus will continue to walk in the midst of every one of us. He is there because he's not afraid of sin. He's not afraid of anything that we can place there in front of him, any barrier that we might throw up before God. And Jesus will say, no, that wimpy little barrier is never going to be something that will prevent my love breaking through into your life. And so Jesus wanders through the streets of Jericho on this day. And where's he going? In the very next section of the end of this 19th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, he will arrive in Jerusalem. This is the end of the journey. In just a few days' time, he will make his triumphant entry into Jerusalem on the day that we know as Palm Sunday, perhaps bearing the palms that the disciples have gathered here in the City of Palms there in Jericho. And so he makes his way through this city of sin. And Zacchaeus, obviously the crowd is making a noise. There's a large group of his disciples following him at this point. There would be the atmosphere of a festivity and celebration, people crying out and shouting aloud with joy and jubilation to see this one that they are calling the Messiah, walking through their very streets, coming in their very midst. Zacchaeus is short. And so like little children, he's not able to see through the crowd of people who line the streets. Another sign of how despised he is that no one makes way for him. No one says, oh, Zacchaeus, here, come to the front. Come and see the spectacle of this man Jesus as he walks in our midst. No one offered him that. No one would have even imagined that Zacchaeus, so caught up in his wealth, so caught up in his pomposity and all of the wealth that he had amassed for himself. They would have never imagined that he would have any interest at all on that day. And yet he does. There's enough curiosity there in Zacchaeus that despite his dignity, despite the shame that people would have been able to see him climbing this tree, dressed in his finery, and perhaps, you know, he would have been an older man. He's not a young man if he's amassed such wealth over this lifetime of a career. Perhaps he's lived the good life and he's a little bit on the portly side and needs to have his cholesterol checked. He's that, and yet he climbs this tree. He makes his way up there in order and to be able to look out over the heads and shoulders of the crowd just to catch a glimpse of Jesus. And then that beautiful moment, that experience when Jesus looks up. And the wonderful thing, it's not, hey you. It's not, little short fat guy, come down from the tree. But he calls to Zacchaeus by name. And Jesus always calls us by name. The invitation that Jesus makes to us is always personal. We're never just a face in a crowd because Jesus knows us by name. He knows our sins. He knows our struggles. He knows all of the things that we've built around our lives, the sense of identity that we've placed, that sense of wanting for a moment to forget all the things that have stuffed us up in order just to associate ourselves with someone who is popular, someone who has their act together, someone who the crowds are following. We want to be with that person. I mean, that's why movie stars have that allure. We want to be with them because we want to be like them. We want to be worshipped in a sense. We want to have that fame and popularity. And so Zacchaeus is no different. He simply wants to be in the very presence of someone who's causing such a stir. But into that, Jesus, knowing his story, knowing his history, knowing all of the things that he's done wrong, knowing the stupid decisions that his sin has brought to him, speaks directly into his life. Zacchaeus, come down. And then that beautiful thing, because it's always that sense that we're in a hurry when we're in the presence of God. Hurry down. Don't dawdle. Come, because today I have to go to your house. Today I have to share a meal with you. Today I need to be part of your life. That is the invitation to salvation. That is what Jesus wants from every single one of us, to bring him home, to make him part of our house. And you say, well, Father, of course, yes. You know, I've got that cross on the wall in my child's bedroom. Yes, Jesus is part of our house. But Jesus says, no, I don't want to just be out in the tool shed. I don't want to be just left in the garage. I don't want to be out in the doghouse. I want to be in your home. I want to be part of your life. I want to be where you live. I want to be where you eat, when you watch TV, when you make love. I want to be there in every aspect of your life. Don't shut me out to one small part of your house. Don't say, well, the 1 hour a week that we come to church, that's enough. That's what we are able to offer to the Lord. If we want to hear that beautiful truth that Jesus addresses to Zacchaeus, for this man too is a son of Abraham. And so I tell you that today salvation has come to his house. Today new life has come. Today a fresh hope has dawned on this man who had no friends, who had no hope, who had no life. And yet in the presence of Jesus, everything changes. In the presence of Jesus, Zacchaeus is suddenly free from all of these addictions. In the presence of Jesus, Zacchaeus is able to stand before the face of all of these people who hated him and say, no, I'm going to give half of all that I have to the poor. And if I have defrauded anybody, then I will repay them 4 times over. I imagine by the end of the day, the wealth that Zacchaeus has accumulated over the course of a whole lifetime is not going to have much left, because he would have defrauded so many people over the course of his life. And yet, he knows now that none of that was worth it. None of the wealth, none of the hatred that he had built up over the course of a lifetime, none of that was worth it. Sure, he looked good. Sure, he was able to eat at the best establishments there in Jericho. He probably lived in the biggest and grandest house, but he knew at that moment But none of that mattered because he'd met the face of truth. He'd come before the very presence of love itself. And that changes everything. That transforms and changes and softens the hardest of our hearts. The beautiful, wonderful thing about this passage, as Pope John Paul preached in a homily to priests, addressing us with this text, reminding us that this is the invitation to every single human being ever created. That Jesus wants to have this relationship, not just with the holy ones, not just those who have made it, not just those who have wealth and power, but this invitation is offered to every single one of us here tonight. Every single one of us has a chance to say to Jesus, "You want to come to my house? Sure. I would love for you to be in my home. I would love to make a space for you in the midst of where I live. Please, Lord, come and save me. Come and bring your life, bring your salvation, bring your truth, bring your freedom, bring your healing into my life tonight." We have that chance. We have that possibility of being changed and saved and receiving new life tonight. Jesus will say to every one of us, "Hurry down, because today I want to be in your house." But the answer is up to us. He offers grace freely, openly, but it's up to us to say yes or no. It's up to us to receive that invitation and to allow Jesus to accompany us in the midst of our life. Brothers and sisters, let's be people who say, "Yes, today salvation has come to my house."